Here we are on Valentine's Day, and Steve, did you get a Valentine from your Valentine yet?
I'm going to plead the fifth, Dan.
What'd you do?
No, I didn't do anything. I'm Valentine-less this year.
You're an ogre. You've got children. You've got children. Your children didn't.
I've got children.
Well, they didn't say, Dad. You know, my kids give me stuff. I guess my kids
really?
Like. Yeah, I guess my. Wow. I mean, my grown kids. I just got a text a minute ago from my oldest daughter. They love me.
You know, I think my children love me. I don't think that we brought them up to share Valentine with their parents. But I guess that is done elsewhere.
Well. Maybe you need to rethink that process. Or is it too late?
So.
Is it too late? Hey,
it may be too late for at least one of them. I don't know.
I don't want to go down that road. How are you doing?
I'm good. I think the last time we spoke, I was sitting in my hotel room in D.C. I spent 8 days up there. Just got back into the Carolinas a couple of days ago and am now decontaminating from 8 days in the swamp, and then additionally decompressing from all that was going on and all that happened there, all that I learned. It was quite a trip.
Well, before we launch into anything else, tell us what new came up when you were there.
I'm very close to being able to talk about who I'm working with. I think I mentioned last week that I am now working with one of the groups. I can tease everybody by saying it's a very, very large think tank. Everybody will know who it is when I finally say their names, when I'm clear to do so. But I'm working with a large think tank in D.C. that is providing investigative services for the new House committees that have been formed, particularly the one on the weaponization of three-letter agencies against American people. And then also another House committee, which is the House Administration Committee, which is a ongoing, that's not a select committee, that is a regular House committee that oversees basically everything that happens with the administration of the Capitol, and that includes the Capitol Police. So you can imagine why they're interested in my work right now related to the Capitol Police itself. And so as a result of those interactions that I had last week with that group, it looks like that they are probably, I'm not going to count my chickens before they hatch, but it's very likely that they're going to bring me on the team to assist in these current investigations and hearings that are taking place related to the Capitol, related to the Capitol Police, related to January 6th, obviously.
Do you really want to go down that road?
I think that from my position, it's the best way for me to make the impact that I think needs to be made. Myself, other individuals that I'm working with, I call them my team, although it is a loosely associated team who have been doing very specific and high-level investigations into what was taking place on January 6th, that in order for us to get the hearing that we need for the findings that we're making, that it probably needs to happen that way. And certainly the group that I'm working with has the means, has the financing, has the contacts. I mean, I was sitting in meetings with staffers from Congress members. So there you go.
Well, I know that you'll be Johnny on the spot, and anything that comes out of any of that, if you go down that road, that you can share with us. We look forward to hearing from you, you keeping us posted on those things, because as you said just moments ago, there's a lot of stuff going on in Washington, D.C. that we don't know about.
Yes.
And so on that, go ahead.
I was going to say the only downside to this is that I'm going to have to spend even more time in D.C. than I've been spending there lately. But that's an unfortunate part of the process. And I will tell you that the individuals that I am working with, they are surprisingly, they seem to be despite their many years there in the swamp, they seem to be unaffected by it because these seem to be individuals who are genuinely looking for the truth and are trying, and they're desperately making the efforts to right the ship. And so these are the kinds of people that if I'm going to associate directly with people living in the swamp, that I want to be associated with.
That's interesting. You got my curiosity up now. You're going to have to talk to me off air every week to tell me the things that you can tell me off air. I know there will be things, specific things that you won't be able to share, but it'll be interesting. I know you're very inquisitive and you always ask questions and drill deep. Do you think you'll be in an environment that's conducive for you to do that?
Well, the fact that I do ask deeper questions is what makes them interested in me. They're very intrigued by my own analysis and my own findings thus far. Obviously I've been immersed in that one topic for 2 years now.
Sure.
And as a result of that, I have been able to lay out for them scenarios which they have never even contemplated. I've been able to lay out for them specific incidences related to all the various moving parts and connections and individuals leading up to the event on January 6th and then thereafter that they also were completely unaware of. And these are people that are living there, and part of being inside that, you know, that beltway is you do find yourself, when you think you're in the middle of it, you're also isolated from it because it is a bubble. And you have to step outside of it in order to sometimes see things clearly. And I think part of the reason that I am able to process information and think my way through it sometimes more clearly is because I don't live inside that bubble. I don't mind visiting it. I don't mind going inside to deliver the news or to deliver my findings, but I've got to get out of it because I'll tell you what, you know, 8 days at a time is sometimes too much.
I, in my career with my company, Washington Hospital Center was one of our biggest clients. And I spent a good bit of time up there. And I have friends in D.C., in the D.C. area. And often we would get together for dinner and just catch up people that I went to college with many years ago. And the most incredible thing to me was how they literally live in a different world. They don't think the same way that people outside the Beltway think, and they don't understand why we aren't just immersed in their like think that they're immersed in, and therefore they think that way, they live that way. DC does that to people. I can see having an outsider in the mix that's a professional, especially an investigative journalist, they would look at you. They would be cautious, but they would, if they're really sincere and genuine about what their goals and objectives are, they would want someone like you involved in the mix, if for no other reason, to give them some more objective opinions about things. I think you'll be able to make a big difference.
I think these guys recognize that. I think that they understand that that's the case and that my perspective is fresh. Just kind of distill it down to that from their own mode of thinking and the way that they approach the process. And my approach to the process is not trained by any means, but it's aggressive, and it's also an approach in which I don't care where the truth takes me. You and I have talked about this before. And that is part, I think, of the success that I'm having in making the connections that I'm making, is that the individuals, whether we're talking about whistleblowers, whether we're talking about whistleblowers inside the Treasury Department, the Capitol Police, FBI, the Department of Justice that I have been talking to of late, those individuals are willing to talk to me. Some of them have approached me themselves. I've not sought them out. They've sought me out. It's because I think that they see from my writings and my style, the way I'm going after this, is that I don't care where the truth leads. I just want the truth. I don't want your truth. I don't want my truth. I don't want their truth. I want the truth. And it doesn't matter whose desk or whose hidden file cabinet that truth leads to.
Well, keep us posted. Stick your nose in there and get as much and keep as much information as you can.
Yeah.
And be careful. That's all I have to say. Let's segue.
Well, I am definitely doing that.
Well, I know you are. Let's segue towards some of the, you know, the really big things that I'm sure you know way, way more than we do. Let's let's start with what I've termed Balloon Gate.
Yeah.
It's only been a week since you were on the show last, and we had already had one balloon, but now we've had three more. And we don't know anything. We know nothing. And that's dangerous for Americans because we'll always say something, something. We never just let it float out there and stay with a question mark on it because we can't do that. We're supposed to know everything, especially people like you and me. So I waited anxiously, bated breath. Tell me the truth about the Biden balloon gate. What the heck are these things?
Dan, it's an alien invasion, Dan. That's what it is. Don't you know? They won't deny it. You know, standing in front of the podium, in front of the press corps, they won't deny that it's aliens. But you know, let's be, you know, I'm not trying to be silly about that. I want it to be. If there's one thing that I want to happen in my lifetime, and this is because of my lifelong love of science fiction and growing up on Star Trek. I want to be alive when we make that connection with an alien civilization. And so that's everything that I want it to be. But my logical mind says that aliens are not invading us with balloons. Okay. If they were, the alien balloons would not be so easily shot down by our, you know, Sidewinder missiles. And furthermore, if even our own incompetent government knew that these were aliens, do you really think that we'd be purposefully angering beings capable of interstellar flight by shooting them down? I mean, I know Biden has no problem, seems to have no problem angering Putin and his stockpile of nuclear weapons with all that we're doing in Ukraine, but I just don't believe that the powers that be would be ad hoc shooting down alien aircraft. It just doesn't make sense. So I think everybody in your audience can set that aside, regardless of whatever tinfoil hat experiences that they have or whatever they believe about what goes on in the world. I think we can let that one go. Are they Chinese aircraft, balloons, Russian? I don't know. There seems to be two things that are happening right now. And what I'm most concerned about is this cooperative militaristic alliance that is taking place right now between Russia and China. And this cooperation that's happening seems to be manifesting itself in increased surveillance of not just our own assets around the world, but also we've seen recently, and especially in the last year and in the lead up to the Ukrainian war, there was a lot more surveillance from the Russians in, for instance, the Scandinavian territories, submarines invading their sovereign space, aircraft surveillance taking place there, really frightening the Swedes and the Finns and such. And so now we're seeing this seeming increased activity, but do we really know it? Do we know that it's increased, or is this just typical? Is just workaday spy business that we all do, that we all initiate between countries because all major powers on this planet have very aggressive surveillance operations, and this is going on all the time. we're watching them all the time. They're watching us all the time. It's just the modus operandi of big nations with big budgets that can do that. So I don't know if this is something that is increasing right now or if it's something because they got caught with their pants down in this big balloon that was shot down off the coast of South Carolina, that now that we're having to make a show of force and taking out minor operations or little, you know, drone type surveillance balloons that are here all the time. I don't know. I mean, and nobody knows. I don't know anybody myself that knows for sure. And certainly if they know, they can't talk about it. They're not allowed to. So
let me just give you a little inside scoop I got right before we went live on the air. I know what's going on. It began about 45 days ago. Xi Jinping was in a poker game, and one of his key confidants, that's the head of, probably top tier head of the Chinese army, made a bet with Xi Jinping, and it all boiled around finding a way to embarrass the United States of America. And so they had a few drinks and it just got out of hands. And so they decided to find a way to embarrass President Joe Biden. And the balloons were the obvious, most, you know, reasonable, because they're not fast flying. And to embarrass Joe Biden, it can't be fast flying. It's got to be moving really slow. So he can, you know, get his arms around what it's all about. And of course, he has. That's why he's come out every day to inform the American people about what's going on. Now, my version of what it was about is just as believable as any other one that anybody with any kind of position in the government has maintained it could be. Yesterday, I went nuts. I just happened to see the press briefing, not the Karine Jean-Pierre press briefing, but the other one with right. Admiral Kirby.
Right.
And yeah. His explanation was, well, it was happening during the Trump administration. How did Donald right. Trump not see it and learn about it?
If that's, well, they can't speak without bringing Trump into the conversation.
I know.
That's not even possible.
My wife had a hangnail yesterday, and I know Donald Trump had something to do with it. I mean,
exactly right.
this is insane. We have real bad stuff that's happening. We have real bad and evil things going on in our government. We're sending billions of dollars to a Nazi that's a former actor in Ukraine, and we're sending it through cryptocurrency, and a huge portion of that $113 billion that went to Ukraine, it didn't get to Ukraine. Nobody's asking any questions. You can't ask questions if it's about something going on that's politically correct. If you dare ask a question about the substance of the matter, you're an evil MAGA Republican, and you've got to just be zeroed out of existence. That's the world in which we live. There's no facts. There's no foundation. Nothing's believable, but you can say anything. And if you happen to be politically connected at that moment when you say it, what you say, that's fine. We're going to make decisions, national emergency decisions, based upon what you said, because you're woke. It's crazy.
Yeah, to me, the most obvious explanation, and this is putting my political hat on, not my investigative hat. It's not because I know anything special or from anyone well-connected. It is simply this, is you did hit on one thing very accurately, regardless of whether it happened over a poker match or not. Biden was, in fact, politically embarrassed by allowing that first balloon to be tracked by NORAD. Obviously, he's getting reports on it. He has a national security briefing every single morning there in the White House or wherever he happens to be, Camp David or Delaware, any of his other homes or vacation spots. He gets that briefing every single morning. So they knew about that balloon 10 days, 2 weeks in advance before it crossed over into our contiguous states. And as a result of that and the fallout from the political side of it, is that I believe that they decided to go ahead and make a show thereafter of shooting down some of these other minor drone-type balloons that the skies are filled with. And by the way, Dan, I'm one of those guys, as you know, as soon as I start reading about these things, I start looking up things on the, you know, go to the internet. And didn't have to go far. I just had to go to Amazon.com. I had to go to eBay.com, and I found that you can buy these weather balloons, quite large. I'm talking about big ones, anywhere from, you know, 22 to 27, 40 feet across when they're fully inflated. And they're the pricing on them are from $99 to $400 that you can buy your own weather balloon. Once you've inflated that thing, you can send that up into the stratosphere. And these are balloons that will, in fact, go up into the stratosphere.
Right.
And if the average private citizen can buy these balloons, I would imagine that the stratosphere is full of them all the time, which gives our Defense Department and NORAD a lot of things they have to be looking at all of the time. And I just think that Biden was so embarrassed by this that he gave directive to his people, to his, you know, his chief of staff there, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, to go up and shoot down a few things and make it look like we're doing something. And I think that's what they've done.
You're probably right. Probably right. Well,
I think it's no more complicated than that.
So I guess what we're saying is you and I, when we put our heads together today, we concluded about Balloongate that we don't know anything about Balloongate. Anything we say is just conjecture. It's just
this, and it's all conjecture.
Yeah, it is. And this just describes exactly what political environment this president and his administration has put us in. We get very few substantive answers about any of our questions about what's going on, the whys and who and when and where. We can't even get the simple things nailed down. And any answer that we get, it's usually pontificated, and it comes from one specific perspective that's given to the president by someone else. And he says it as long as he can stay on teleprompter. Meanwhile, there's a lot of really serious stuff going on. What do you think about the Proud Boys information that came out overnight?
Well, this has been developing for a long time because this document, this 1776 document that they're talking about in the case, was actually, I think it was first presented as far back as June or July of last year, maybe even before that. But this document, now we know, was not a document created by the Proud Boys. And I did hear you tease this in your first hour. And we know now that this document was actually produced by an individual who is somewhat of a high-level security analyst guy. He's been working out of, what's the base there just outside of Tampa? I should know that. My daughter just lived there for 2 years. His name is Samuel Arms. He is a guy that on his resume showed that he had been working and involved with multiple government informants himself, that he told the January 6th Select Committee last year that he had also worked for the State Department and Special Operations Command out of MacDill Air Force Base there in Tampa. And it has also come out, and the FBI themselves have even admitted that there is no evidence whatsoever that this particular document was ever opened by, and I don't think it was sent to Enrique Tarrio, the president or the founder of the Proud Boys. I don't believe that it was even sent to him until December 30th of 2021, so just 7 or 8 days before the January 6th event. and that they had no evidence whatsoever that he ever passed it around to anybody else. That there's, in fact, they have no electronic evidence that he ever even opened the document. And so they've been using this document called the 1776 Returns, which was supposed to be the actual battle plan, the plan of attack, the advanced plan of attack on the Capitol. And in all of these indictments, this document has been cited. But now we know that the document was not created by the Proud Boys. It was not created by the Oath Keepers. It was sent to them by somebody on the inside of the government who works with intelligence operations, and that there is no evidence that, A, that Tarrio ever opened it, or that he ever passed it around to any of the other Proud Boys. So this is a bombshell.
Let me ask you this about Tarrio. He's been charged with seditious conspiracy, and he's still... They're not through with him yet. He's in trial along with four fellow members of the Proud Boys. Exactly how does this play into this whole January 6th mystery that it just seems like, Steve, about every week when you get here, maybe every other week, there's something new that's being exposed about the January 6th events and the players and who did what and when and who knew what.
We're now over 2 years since that event, Dan, and the reason why it's becoming a big deal, and it should be a big deal. Unfortunately, the mainstream press is not covering it to the level that the likes of you and I are doing it, and some others like Julie Kelly, and very, very, very few others. And the reason why they're not covering it is because these explosive and what we would call exculpatory events are taking place. But the reason why it's all hot again 2 years later is because there's so many trials taking place concurrently. We are into the trial phase now. For the first 2 years, we had just plea deals, basically. We had plea deal after plea deal after plea deal. We did have a few bench trials that were single defendants with minor charges, even like myself, independent investigators that decided to go, they were not going to plead guilty to anything because they just followed the story when the story went into the Capitol building. And they did get charged with misdemeanor charges, and they decided to go and take bench trials. So we didn't hear anything about those, but now we're into the big ones. And obviously the first really big trial was the initial Oath Keeper trial that I was there every day for 9 weeks. And then we had the second Oath Keeper trial, which just concluded a couple of weeks ago. Now the third one has begun, the third Oath Keeper trial. And in the midst of all this is a very extended and very protracted Proud Boys trial. And that's because more and more of this type of bombshell evidence is coming out in this particular trial. And another thing that's happening that's causing these revelatory events to take place and be revealed is that these defense teams obviously are learning from one another. They're learning from the mistakes of the previous team. They're learning to dig deeper with every time they pull back a layer, they're finding something else underneath that. And then there's another layer underneath that one. And that's why we're seeing these things right now. Unfortunately, the guys that are covering it in the mainstream are not covering it in the same way that I've spent obviously the last couple of days doing a little bit of catching up on the Proud Boys thing because I've not been there at that trial. I only attended one day of that trial early on, and that was just during a jury selection. But the reason why I haven't been covering this one is I've been so involved in the Capitol Police story that I'm working on right now, and I'm hoping to have part three of that story out this week. But my point being is that in my catch up on the Proud Boys trial here in the last couple of days, I've been able to look at this and see how these things are being revealed. It is a slow grinding process to get the truth out there. And unfortunately, as I'm reading the mainstream media stories on it, they only, just like in the first Oath Keepers trial, they're only covering half of the events that are taking place in this trial. They're operation, and it seems to be collusion between the different mainstream media sources, and we've seen that before in different issues, yeah, not just yeah. January 6th, yeah. is that they seem to compare notes, and then you will get almost the same headlines from each of them. You certainly get the same review of that day's activities in any particular trial, because what they do is they cover what the government, what the prosecutors are doing, what they cover their questions and their answers from their defendants, and then they leave out of their stories what is taking place when cross-examination is happening by the defense, and the defense is tearing them apart. And that's what happened in the first Oathkeepers trial. We've talked about this before. I think there was something like 9 different FBI agents that testified in the Oathkeepers trial, the first one. 9 different FBI agents, all called, obviously, by the government, by the prosecutors, by the Department of Justice. And all 9 of those FBI agents said on the stand under cross-examination that they had no written, no verbal proof whatsoever of Oathkeeper leadership initiating, calling for, or suggesting a plan to enter the Capitol, overthrow the government, disrupt the certification of the Electoral College vote. Just didn't exist, but that was the government's case. And about 2/3 of the way through that trial, the government realized that they were having their butts handed to them, and they switched gears. We talked about this, and they implemented this new idea to the jury that it was okay. So it wasn't an explicit plan. We have no evidence of that, but it was an implied plan. It was an implicit plan. Yeah. It was a thought crime. Yeah. And that's what the government has had to work with at this point.
So for the audience, the 1776 document, it was a plan to occupy 8 key buildings in D.C., 8 of them, House, Senate office buildings, and the Supreme Court. And it called for mass mobilization of followers. And that's where the seditious charge came out for Tarrio. But he got this thing. He got it, as you said, in the last week of December, or maybe on January 2nd, only days before, and there's no proof that he ever did anything with it. And it was authored in part by somebody that is a product of the Intelligence Committee. And, you know, this is crazy. They're destroying people's lives every day. And this is our government. We can't spend a lot of time on this, but we're going to, by the way, we're going to post the document, the 1776 document, on our website later today if somebody wants to take a look at it. In our last few minutes here, my friend, these are not the only things that are keeping us up at night trying to figure them out. Train wrecks, explosions. I mean, there's stuff happening all over the place. Billings, Montana, a few days ago, a big explosion there. No explanation for it. Loud booms over New Jersey last month. Georgia, a monument was blown up. No explanation for it. And one of these explosions that happened, the police confirmed that it was caused by a meteor. What's going on? I mean, you're a Christian. You come from a Christian background. Is this the end of it all here? Are we headed to heaven? What's happening?
Well, you know, obviously when you grow up in the kind of church that I grew up in, and with the type of evangelist that came through and held those fire and brimstone revivals, you know, we always were hearing about in the last days there'd be wars and rumors of wars and the earthquakes and all of this. And Dan, I'm going to take off my tinfoil hat once again. Let me just give you an example here. All right.
I'm right there with you.
Yeah. Here's a couple of things that everyone needs to just take a deep breath and calm down a little bit about. All right. This particular derailment with all of the chemicals that have been spilled and set on fire in Ohio.
This is the worst one. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting questions around this one, and they go back to political motivations that we're we need to get answers to why.
Right.
Why has the mainstream press avoided that up until just the last 2 days? They basically ignored it. Why has our Secretary of Transportation, Pete, you know, Buttery Gig, whatever his name is, why did he wait 10 full days before even commenting on that particular incident? He waited until after 8 o'clock last night, and after he was getting brutalized for his speech yesterday when he was talking about not even worthy of his discussion in his department as a Secretary of Transportation. He was talking about the fact that there were too many white people working on construction jobs in America. And Dan, I don't know if he's actually been to a construction site in the last 20 years.
I have. Yeah.
And at least 95% of that workforce is in fact Hispanic now.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what he's talking about, but the point being is that he waited for over 10 days before he ever even mentioned this. And obviously a train wreck would be in his department's purview. And obviously the disaster of this magnitude would be something you would expect somebody from the administration to address. And being the Secretary of Transportation, you would think he would have addressed it before 8 o'clock last night, but he finally got embarrassed into having to mention it. But having laid that groundwork, I will tell you this, and this is the, how did Gore put it? The inconvenient truth of the matter is that since 1990, since we started counting these things, there is an average of 1,704 train derailments per year. That's about 4.5 a day. Now, we don't hear about them because most of them happen in very rural areas or minor derailments. There's no injuries. They get them back on the tracks very quickly. But when you have a big event like this, it's like the best way I know to put it is when you buy a new car, whatever, if you buy your new white Toyota Camry and you get out on the highway, what do you start seeing everywhere? You start seeing white Toyota Camrys everywhere. You suddenly realize that half the population has a white Toyota Camry.
Yeah.
But you didn't know that until you bought one. You just thought it was a great looking car and you bought it. And so that's what's happening right now in the populist and in our perspective, our peripheral vision, is we see a big event like that, and then we start noticing then all of them, and we start going, why is this happening? Why did we have three huge derailments in just the last few days? No, it actually happens all the time, but we had a big one that drew everybody's attention to it. It's finally getting into our consciousness of what's been happening in Ohio, and now we start seeing all the other ones that are taking place. But there's an average of 4.5 train derailments a day just in this country alone. The other thing, of course, is, and though even though the mainstream media, particularly the cable news channels, have largely ignored that Ohio event up until just the last couple of days, now that they're on it, we now are getting it 24 hours a day on a half a dozen different cable news networks, and it's hitting the internet. So if you're signing on to Twitter, Facebook, whatever you subscribe to on the internet, you're seeing these reports now. And so now it seems to be a current and immediate event that's taking place, when in fact it's something that happens all the time. It just so happens that in Ohio, this is a big one. That's a devastating event.
If it's not good news and it doesn't sell newspapers and get eyeballs on television reports, they won't cover it. This is big news. So is Balloongate and every other thing that we talked about today. They're newsworthy. Yeah. Americans are foaming to get facts, to try to understand things. And to be quite honest with you, this presidential administration, when it comes to the dissemination of real information, they're not so good about it.
Steve,
the truth of the matter is,
you can see the difference though in the political agenda. There's something going on with this particular event in Ohio that we don't know. We can say about our discussion on the balloons. We don't know yet.
Correct.
Why they avoided this story for so long? Because if it was Three Mile Island, which probably had far less long-term effects than what this event is going to have, They were all over that because obviously something related to nuclear energy is something that they want to criticize, something that they want to hype. They want to create they want to take basically a non-event and turn it into a national disaster. Whereas with this particular thing, it's got my radar way up right now. My antennas are fully extended on this one because there's a reason why they avoided talking about this for 10 days.
Steve Baker, we got to pull the plug on the day. Man, thanks so much for all the information you bring every Tuesday. Don't forget, folks, every Tuesday, second hour of our show, 10 to 11, Steve Baker, investigative journalist, is with us. Have a great day, Steve. We will see you next Tuesday right here at TNN Live.
Uncertain about what you see and hear in mainstream media? Worried about getting the truth? No worries anymore. Get the truth, only the truth, at TNN, the Truth News Network.
At Truth News Network.